Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to Off the Beat and Track podcast. I'm your host, I'm Stu Whiffin. It's another week, therefore it's another episode. Today's episode, I sit down with Sam Ryder and it's great. It's quite a topsy-turvy one. We got a little bit confused on the format and it was my bad. Sam put together seven songs that he thought were important in his life, which is kind of what this podcast is about. But we'll explain it all when it gets going, and it all works out lovely, and we find a common thread. And then we find out that Sam literally had all his formative years 20 minutes up the road from me. So there's lots of kind of mutual friends and lots of kind of moments where, well, I imagine at some point we've definitely been in the same room, because there's lots of venues that he's played in over the years that I've been involved with and things like that. So it's a really nice kind of, for someone who's a total stranger, it was a very friendly conversation, and it felt like, to me anyway, that we sort of knew each other a little. It's a really, really lovely natter, this one. Before we get on with it anyway, a few thank yous first. So thank you to Ryan for facilitating this. Thank you to Scroobius Pip and everybody at the Distraction Pieces Network that this podcast is very, very proud to be part of. If you've not explored the Distraction Pieces podcast, then what are you waiting for? I'm sure a big majority of the listenership of this podcast has come via Scroob and his magnificent podcast, which if it wasn't for that, then, you know, I wouldn't even be doing this podcast in Lark. So big love to Pip. And all the other podcasts on the Distraction Pieces Network are amazing. Just go and get stuck into them, because, you know, it is a little family and it's lovely. And we've got a little WhatsApp group and, you know, we're all kind of keeping an eye out for each other. And, yeah, there's a lot of love in that network. So, go and feel some of that love. Thank you to 76 for producing this podcast, who's gone above and beyond during lockdown to grab these kind of bits of Zoom audio and polish them up and make them sound as warm as he can for your listening pleasure. But hey, it appears, don't want to tempt fate, everything's getting back to normal. So who knows? Could do that thing that you used to do in podcasts. I don't know if you remember, a couple of years ago, people used to sit in rooms together and have a little chat. Hopefully we can do that again soon. Looking forward to that. Being able to look into someone's eyes, not in a weird way, just in an interested way. And be able to kind of feel the ambiance in the room and all of that. Looking forward to it. Also, can I ask you if you'd like to support the podcast, just to give it a like or a love or a share or a retweet. I'm on all the social media platforms, so you can go and give us a follow. It all helps. And if it's your first time listening to Off the Beaten Track podcast, when you get to the end of this Ace Chat with Sam, go and explore the back catalogue, because I've spoke to some of the people that we talk about today. I've spoken to Tommy Lee of Motley Crue. You can listen to my chat with Tommy Lee. You can hear me talking to Foo Fighters, to Fatboy Slim, to Papa Roach. I'm not going to rattle them off, but yeah, there's a really big back catalogue now of sort of 300 episodes with all of your favourite musicians, comedians, actors, producers. If you like your rock stuff, which we talk about a lot of today, Butch Vig, the producer, arguably one of the greatest and most iconic rock producers of all time. I had a lovely chat with him. And if that's not enough, having 300 episodes that you can listen to for free, there's also another few hundred episodes and radio shows and video episodes that you can go and get stuck into on my Patreon. And that's a really good way if you'd like to support the podcast, because it's fundamentally a labour of love. And so you can go over to Patreon, which is patreon.com/offthebeatandtrack. And for 79p a month, you can support the podcast. And if you can, that'd be lovely. I'm very aware that we're at the tail end of a very difficult time. So if pennies are tight, that's all right. Don't worry about it. Just tell a mate, go ahead, have a listen to this podcast. It's well all right, you know. It's this kind of old bloke from Essex with a lisp that gets overexcited about records when he talks to really, really amazing creative people. But everything you need to know about that back catalogue, everything you need to know about the Patreon, everything you need to know about everything to do with this podcast, www.offthebeatandtrackpodcast.com. Anyway, I know why you're here. It's not to hear me lisping away, plugging stuff. It's to listen to this episode. So please enjoy Off the Beaten Track podcast with Sam Ryder. Right, I've got to take a quick break in this podcast because I've got some super exciting news. Off the Beaten Track podcast is proud to go into partnership with the Cacao Bar from Hotel Chocolat. That's right. The Cacao Bar is not a chocolate bar. It's all the best bits of a chocolate bar put into a really exciting new alcoholic range. That's right. Gin, vodka, and a beautiful range of cream liqueurs. So one of the big bonuses of this partnership is obviously I'm super thrilled to have Hotel Chocolat working with us, but they sent me a great big box of this stuff. And I'm telling you, it's amazing. Go and check it out, www.hotelchocolat.com, or over on the socials at Hotel Chocolat. But yeah, in the coming months, there's going to be opportunities for you to get involved with competitions with us, to win bottles of stuff. There's loads of exciting things coming soon, and I can't be more happy to say that this podcast is in partnership with the Cacao Bar from Hotel Chocolat. All right, let's get back to the podcast. It's Off the Beaten Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network with me, Stu Whiffin. Okay, we are recording. Sam, how are you doing today?
How you doing, Stu? I'm fantastic, man. Thank you so much for asking. Thanks for having me.
Well, we've just spoke briefly before our press record, and we've established that as much as I was all excited that I've been out in my garden in a rather sunny Essex, you've blown me out of the water by telling me that you're in Cornwall. The sun's blazing. You've had a freshwater swim and some pancakes, going to do this and have a surf. I mean, fuck me. It don't get a lot better than that, does it?
Sorry, mate. I've got to do some shopping or something. Got to
right,
go
cool.
Sainsbury's. How's that?
Yeah,
that
that's good. Yeah, if we can, mate. I want some bland out of you. I want something really bland, uninteresting. Yeah, got to do the big shop.
Get some new cutlery and plates and stuff like that. Yeah.
Track one, the song with the greatest ever intro, please, Sam.
Right. Okay. Well, it's similar to the song I had anyway. So I think it's got to be Bohemian Rhapsody for me, actually.
Okay.
I know it's such an obvious choice, but it's just like, it's sparse, but euphoric. It's just the texture of like the voices, Freddie, Brian, Roger and John. It's just like, it's gorgeous. And it like the world over, it will have, if you play that and you look at the sort of, the expressions on people's faces in the room, everyone's going to be stoked. Yeah. No one's going to be like, oh God, do you know?
Yeah.
It just gets better with age. It's fantastic. But so like in my list, right, I just had sort of the first song that I ever heard. And it's similar in a way. It's Living On My Own by Freddie Mercury. Mm-hmm. My first memory as a kid was sitting in the back of the car, my mum and dad driving around, and like, and like my mum said that I would just sing that incessantly as a kid. So yeah, that's on my list. And then your answer, Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah.
And then on my list, Living on My Own, Freddie Mercury. So there's some synchronicity there.
Perfect. Perfect. Well, before we sort of move on to the next question and the next track as well, just sort of casting your mind back to, I mean, what you've just said about your day so far, I mean, it just sounds absolutely perfect. However, for the last sort of 14 months, so much of the stuff that we've took for granted and have enjoyed has been sort of taken away and put on hold. So how have you found the last 13, 14 months as both Sam, human being, and Sam, creative?
I think for me, it was like when lockdown started, it was obviously like a lot of panic and not just sort of, you know, what does this mean? How is this going to affect like the music industry? How's it going to affect selfishly yourself financially? You know, like everyone's got bills to pay, and everyone back in March was thinking, Jesus, what's, you know, before any of the furlough schemes, especially like self-employed people, I'm not going to take this down a boring path, don't really.
No, it's all true though, man. These things, you know, these were the knee-jerk instant worries, weren't they?
I'm sure you're in the same boat of those people that were self-employed. I know a ton of my friends, and to skim over it would be doing a disservice to so many of my friends that are like road crew or TMs or, you know, in that sort of line of work within the industry. No one really knew how they were going to, you know, pay their mortgages and stuff like that. Sure. And some of my friends got little kids, and it must have been a huge stress. And like, I count myself as someone incredibly fortunate just because I've got like a garden. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And I could sit out and get some fresh air. But you heard stories of people living at like in like the top floor of a flat in London, and like they can't. The nearest park to them is like a 30-minute journey. And back in the, you know, the first days of lockdown, everyone really took these rules as gospel. As like, you know, it's going to take me 30 minutes to walk to that park, and by the time I got there, I got to come back to have your hour of allotted time. So it was, man, I don't want to start like waffling or going off on a tangent, but it was incredibly confusing, and it stopped all of us in our tracks. And the silver lining, and to get to the positives for me, is like really connecting with music again, and having the space and the lack of pressure from, you know, these things that we inadvertently put on ourselves from outside sources, just because you're able to have this time on your own and using that. And I'm very conscious of how I'm talking about this, because it's like I can hear in my head someone else having the ability to say, well, that's good, that's fine for you, that's good for you, not everyone could have done that. So in case, you know, to any listeners, I totally understand, and my experience of lockdown might have been far better or far worse than other people's.
There's nothing wrong with that, buddy. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, if you can find positives in a really difficult situation, then, you know, that should be enjoyed. That shouldn't be something that, you know, you should feel bad about. You know, we're all searching, we're all trying to get through it, you know, in whatever way we can. And you know, I think people will have already got the measure of you by now to know that you're not relishing in anyone else's, you know, situation. It's, you know, you're talking about, you know, that finding the positives in what you can, where you can, which is, it's them little things that get you through it.
Yeah, absolutely, man. And the blessing was for all of us that the weather that we had last year, and like, you know, the southeast of the UK is absolute godsend, wasn't it? You know, so hopefully everyone could have enjoyed that in some capacity. So I know obviously the lockdown rules shifted over the summer, and I feel like all of us at some point were able to enjoy a bit of that. And what a blessing, because you know, you're in the UK. Where are you from, by the way,
Steve? Essex.
Essex. So you know as well as I do, the weather this year has been absolutely rubbish up until like the last 2 days.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, like, and it doesn't it make such a difference to like your sort your mental well-being, just waking up every day and it being cloudy and rainy? You're kind of, and you know, the year's getting on, you're thinking, geez, we're gonna get this year. And but yeah, when it comes out, man, when the sun's out. There's nothing beats it. Nothing beats the feeling.
Couldn't agree more. Couldn't agree more, buddy. For track two, I'm going to ask you to cast your mind back, and I want to know the first song you remember hearing that had an emotional impact on you.
Okay, so kind of like, let me look through my little list, see if there's one here. I made like a short list before for our chat, so I was kind of prepared. Give me 2.
That's all good. It's all good. I know I've put you on the spot here, mate.
I think I've got this one. So emotional impact in terms of, it wasn't like a, but I'm just going to tell you the story, right? So when I was in school, about, I'd say 14 years old, something like that, I went to a Catholic school, and we were scheduled to go to a trip to a nunnery, actually, that day.
Good so times. Like,
yeah, standard. I got on the bus, and I think like the school would hire just, you know, normal like buses that go, you know, pick people up. So there was, you know, some things that people had left, whether it being like, I don't know, empty cigarette packets or whatever. But on the floor under my chair, just the CD on its own was Seventh Son by Iron Maiden. And like, I was getting into kind of rock music at that age. And like, just sit, and I'd heard of Iron Maiden because I was such a Sum 41 fan. And I remember in Sum 41 videos, like all of them would be wearing like Priest shirts, like Maiden shirts, Metallica shirts. So I was like, I recognized the font. And by being a fan of Sum 41, I then by proxy was like stoked and interested in being a fan of Iron Maiden. So this CD basically fell in my lap, and I picked it up, and it was so scratched up. God knows how it got there. You know, you don't usually find an Iron Maiden CD on a public bus, but I put it in my Walkman, and nothing would play. It just skip apart from one track, which was The Evil That Men Do. That was the only track that would play all the way through. And I was like, what the hell have I been missing? This is insane. It, like, you know, when you hear something and it ticks every box.
Yeah.
So like, it's just everything. It's or like seeing a band live, and it's like, this is absolute perfection. This was tailor-made for me. That's how I felt when I heard that track. And it just, it put me on a course then of hearing vocalists like Bruce Dickinson, which led me to like Lou Gramm or Steve Perry, and trying to sing along to those bands' records. And that basically, yeah, I've got so much to thank, particularly, you know, like Iron Maiden and Journey and stuff like that, for being where I am now.
And so what was it that, was it just that kind of era of, I guess it was around the American Pie kind of pop punk thing. Was that your entry into kind of guitars?
Yeah. And Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2, yeah, which I think is so, like, so important. Like, I'm sure that the developers of that game didn't know the magic that they were creating when they made it. That is so crucial for that whole scene. And even today, like, people still, you know, go Spotify, chuck the Tony Hawk's 2 mix on. It's amazing. And I remember, like, playing Tony Hawk's, and then when I'd get to the end of that soundtrack, I'd put, like, Take Off Your Pants and Jacket, Blink-182, my CD player, listen to that, and Sum 41, Billy Talent. Like, yeah, just, it was such a vibe. And, yeah, it was that sort of American high school movie sort of, wasn't it?
Yeah, massively. And what's really interesting is, like, I mean, I'm old as fuck, so, like, if I kind of, for me, I was speaking about it, I had the guy, some of the guys on from Dirty Sanchez a little while ago, and we was talking sort of skating then, and how we got turned on to so much music from bootleg, like, skate videos, like, that were just being passed around. And it would, that, it would be like, you'd be watching the skating, but you'd be like, what's that track? What's that track? And we had so much. I mean, back then, it weren't that easy, you know?
Yeah.
But then the fact that it then has merged into, like, it's got still got that skate element, but it then goes on to Tony Hawk's Game. And that is just as impactful and just as, like, influential. It's brilliant.
Yeah. It's amazing, isn't it, what you do to listen to those songs back then? Like, even having, I remember, like, getting ready to go, and I don't know, getting out of the shower, putting my Nintendo on, and having the Menu music play. through my TV. Do you know what I mean? While I'm getting ready to go out, like, I don't know where I'm going at 15, but, like, probably, I don't know, getting up to no good.
Well,
but that's what you did. I remember, like, putting, like, Sonic on as well and just having, like, the background, like, Green Hills. Like, but, yeah, it's so cool.
Well, let's talk about them formative years and being a young tow rag. So for track three, Sam, I'm going to ask you to tell me a song that reminds you of your time at school, please.
Right, let me... I'd say, while we're on it, Sum 41, Fat Lip, 100%.
Yeah.
Because when... I mean, it's a tough one, because it could be, like, Limp Bizkit as well. And I'm going to, like... I'm reeling off really obvious tracks here, but I think that's the point, right? I'm not trying to be artsy and go deep to songs to sort of, like, throw people off the scent. I want to bring up these tracks that everyone's going to relate to.
Dude, and be everybody.
Like, I think that's the same thing.
Thankfully, everybody that's done this podcast has left their call at the door and come in and just gone, right,
yeah,
these are the songs.
Because, man, when listening, like, when you're watching Kerrang! TV and, like, Limp Bizkit came on with Rolling. Like, I was stoked, because before then I was really into, like, Eminem. Do you know what I mean? And yeah, then I saw, like, Fred Durst kind of, like, doing this, like, rock rap thing. And I was like, what? This isn't right. These guys have got guitars. And, like, Wes Borland's over here looking like someone's dug him up out of a graveyard. Like, this is, you know what I mean? And then... But all of a sudden, you're watching it, trying to sort of pick it apart. And because when you're that age, you like one thing and you detest something else, because you're so tribalistic. You want to belong to one thing. And for me, like, I was kind of in that Eminem world. And then I saw Limp Bizkit and I saw it as a threat. But then I listened to it. I was like, actually, this is so good. And that then takes you on to, you know, like Sum 41 and et cetera, et cetera. It just rolls. But yeah, I'd say between Rolling and Fat Lip, just when they'd come on, and then you'd get like, yeah, you just get stoked. You're watching it before your school bus turns up to pick you up, and you're just like getting your fix before, like, yeah, PE.
How was school?
It's good, man. It's good. I was wasn't in the sort of, I had that blessed position in the hierarchy at school, I'd say, looking back. Like, I definitely wasn't in, like, the popular kids, because in my era, it was kind of the popular kids were, like, chavs. Do you know what I mean? And, like, I definitely wasn't those guys, but I was friends with those guys, and I definitely wasn't, like, absolutely at the bottom. But I was also really good pals with the people who were, like, doing their own thing, like chess club or whatever. I don't know. I feel awful saying
this. That's the good player. That's the float in the middle, is the in-betweener. That's where you want to be.
Yeah, man. Because you can kind of, like, you're definitely not cool, and I'm still not cool, but, like, you're not, like, there's no way of saying this, but you're not, like, buggered.
Yeah. yeah, of course.
But yeah, I was, I'm sure that this is the wrong way of explaining this, be very hurtful to some people. But yeah, I was friends to, like, I could sort of mingle in between. Like, the little friendship group I had, we're all a bit nerdy, really. In fact, I'm probably saying, if you ask someone else who went to school with me, they'd be like, oh yeah, he was the dude, like, he was hopeless. We just sort of took pity on him. But yeah, so like me and my friends would go skateboarding, and we were all awful at skateboarding. We could all do like one trick each. Mine was a pop shove it. I could handle a pop shove it okay. My pal Sean's like still my best friend to this day. Like great at doing a kickflip, but that's about it. Do you know? And like listening to Sum 41, and yeah, it was good times.
Was you a confident kid?
I don't think anyone's truly confident. Back in that era, before the way that things are now. But like, I even, you know, because I was friends with some of the more popular kids as well. And looking back, I can see that none of those guys or girls were actually confident. It was all sort of like farcical, almost. Oh. Everyone just trying to get by and fit in and not sort of put their head above the parapet. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
But I was okay in my own skin. Looking back, I never wanted to be anyone else, really. you know, if I really thought about it, I just, I had my own sort of dreams and aspirations, and I sort of really believed that they'd come true. And a lot of them haven't, but I'm okay with it. Do you know what I mean? I'm still fine with being me.
Okay. I'm going to ask you, for track four, Sam, to tell me, please, the first song you remember buying from a record shop.
First, let me get this right. Well, annoyingly, it's I'm trying to get a bit of variety here. But if I'm being truthful, the first thing I remember buying was Does This Look Infected by Sum 41 from Tesco's. But I'm trying to bring in some other bands. So let me think if there was anyone like anything else at that time.
I'll tell you what. Let's
might be Motley Crue, you know.
Oh, really?
I think I bought a Spout of the Devil, Motley Crue.
So how
just because I look cool.
How did this come about? Because, like, in regards to, like, I've always DJed at my venue, which was back then was still playing, you know, was always played guitar music, and you know, from where I was, that kind of Sum 41 Blink thing then seemed to evolve into, you know, for lots of people that I knew would then move into, I guess, some of the new metal stuff, and then Deftones and, and stuff like that. And then also they go back into things like Rage, and then obviously Nirvana, etc. I'm just interested how yours has gone more into that kind of what we call Randy, like cock rock. Like yours went into, you know, you found Maiden, you found Judas Priest, you found like Motley Crue, and it's like, and that's going back what? Fuck. I mean, I suppose if you was listening to that in 2000s, Motley Crue was kind of mid to late or late 80s, really, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean,
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Goes back far because, like, the thing is, I thought I wanted to be a fan of Motley Crue more than I am actually a fan, because you're so governed by the... I mean, back in the day, with, like, Sum 41 and stuff like that, a lot of those bands of their caliber and their style in that genre, they would wear the T-shirts of bands that they loved, which was, again, that's such a crucial thing to take home from that scene, because...
Well, you mentioned tribalism earlier, didn't you?
Sorry?
You mentioned tribalism earlier, and that was a big part of your tribe, wasn't it? You wore the T-shirts of your bands that you liked, and you wanted everyone to know that I'm wearing this because I love this band.
Yeah, it was basically like Spotify back in the day of, you know, like, discover, like, new music.
Yeah.
That was how you did it, because if, like, you go and see your favourite band, and if your absolute hero is on stage wearing a shirt of a band, you're going to want to listen to that band.
Yeah.
So, like, I mean, like, Stretch Armstrong, when I went to see, I think it was Story of the Year, like, one of the dudes was wearing, like, Stretch Armstrong shirt, and I got their record, and it was wicked, and, like, I'm going back now, but it's so cool. And that was the same with Motley Crue. And I really, like, I do love Motley Crue, but they're definitely by no means like my kind of, it's not what I'm like after this interview going to chuck like Shout at the Devil. Actually, I might do. But, now that we're chatting about it. But do you know what I mean? I'm not like a massive, massive Motley Crue fan, but I think what, you know, they're important to the story.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Like Megadeth, I'm a big fan. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I felt that those guys did what ticked way more boxes for me rather than Motley Crue was just so cool. Do you know what I mean? Like, the whole sort of imagery of it and the theatrical, like theatricalism, similar with Maiden and stuff like that. But, yeah.
It was, and it's like, I think that's the thing that, I guess when Nirvana happened and kind of, almost, you know, for quite a long time, sort of killed off that kind of scene, you know, of the kind of spandex and stuff like that. It was like, hang on a minute. Look,
thank God as well, really.
Like, I don't know where that would have gone.
Like, yeah.
I think Axl Rose in cycling shorts and American football tops is probably the where it definitely should have finished. Like, but then, I do think it's really strange because, like you say, so many of the bands that then come in that wave after grunge, just by their very age, wouldn't have been influenced by what was going on a few years earlier. They would have been influenced by the stuff growing up, which would have been Motley Crue and all of that scene. And then I think all of a sudden, although I don't even think they'd got back together and were playing then, but obviously Tommy Lee just become an absolute superstar for all manner of reasons. And and fundamentally, he just was a fucking cool guy. And like, and
yeah, it was exciting, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was just like, you know, like you just to, it was so, like, again, going back to that tribalism thing, to be like a fan of that style of music, it was so easy to show the whole world that you were a fan of that style of music because there was no subtlety whatsoever.
Yeah.
So like, if you're going out dressed in like, I don't know, you wear, you get your nose pierced, almost like someone's going to be like, oh, you, I kind of know what music you're going to like. Even something as small as that, or it could, I don't know, be a spiked collar.
It's so true, though. It's so true. I cast my mind back to, like, the early 90s, and I got my eyebrow pierced because Mike Patton from Faith No More had his eyebrow pierced. I'd never seen anyone like that before. So, what is that? Right, I'm going to get that then. And like, people were like, whoa, what's that? I was like, yeah, I'm into Faith No More, aren't I? And like, you look back and it's fucking tragic, but it felt the best at the time.
Yeah, you think you're like the absolute don. And like, I loved it. When I'd I remember going to see like Avenged Sevenfold when I was and I remember that record as well. It's an important one, City of Evil, for me. But seeing all the kids queued up and everyone's wearing trilbies, like, because everyone's like dressed up as basically Sinister Gates, you know what I mean? The guitar player. But like, bad, like knockoff version, like bootleg Sinister Gates is in the queue. This is so, like, before you find out who you want to be, you kind of like, You're like a flea on a dog, aren't you?
Absolutely.
Like, of
absolutely.
Everyone that you're stoked about. And but it's so important to get out of that. But at the same time, that's how you get out of it, by sort of like faking it in dressed up as people that you think you want to be.
Yeah.
And I remember, like, you know, doing my hair in the mirror, making it look exactly like Derek Whibley. And like, yeah, like we all do it. There's all, and you got your eyebrow pierced, like Faith. We're all doing that when we're kids growing up and finding our own feet. I'd be incredibly suspicious of someone who like found themselves completely at 13 years old.
Never going to happen. Never going to happen. There's a myriad, a multitude of fashion faux pas and horrific hairstyles that you have to go through to get to that point.
Totally, man.
Listen up. I've only got another new sponsor. Egg Fried. It's this super cool clothing label. And if you're into sort of skating and street art and gigging and kind of like really cool art and throwing a little bit of Asian culture and the designer's kind of weird sense of humour in the mix, then you're pretty much there with the wonderful world that is eggfried.com. Now, They do these amazing punchy kind of graphic tees, hoodies and sweatshirts, beautiful art prints, as well as this. They have a denim range, all handmade in-house, all supporting the slow fashion movement. Not only that, they've given you a discount code, 10% off when you head over to eggfried.com. Just use the code EGGSALAD, E-G-G-S-A-L-A-D, save 10%. Go and get lost in the world of Egg Fried. Also, they've got a new kids range, and it's called Small Fried, and it's super cool, super cute. And again, it's all over there in this wonderful world. Go and get involved at eggfried.com. Well, before we get on to track five, which is I'm going to ask you about clubbing. Also, just what I did want to know as well, talking about record shopping and school, whereabouts was this?
So I was in Chelmsford? Yeah. That's where
I went to school. Right, hang on a minute. Right, so this so did you go clubbing in Chelmsford?
So, back in the day, I wasn't really...
No, I'm talking like gigs and rock clubbing.
Yeah, I mean, no, actually, it would have been more culture. So I'm trying to think of places in Chelmsford. So I remember the post office, the box.
Yep, and the bar house.
Yeah, and the guys in the box who, like, had to, usually, on any other day of the week, they're just serving postmen and women. Do you know what I mean? Like, yep. And then all of a sudden on, I don't know if it was like Friday or Saturday
Friday,
night,
yeah.
Some bands would come in with all their fans, and all of a sudden these people, like, they clearly despised that was a part of their job, having to.
Right.
So I remember the guys behind the bar were incredibly grumpy.
Yeah.
But that's why the memories are so fond. I don't remember any of the bands that I ever saw. I just remember being treated like scum by the barman.
Right.
And everyone, it was just like a running joke. This guy was almost like playing a part. And trying to think of other spots in Chelmsford at the time.
Because I run a place just outside. I run a place called the Pink Toothbrush. And
that's Rayleigh area.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, I heard. I never went there.
You missed that.
Yeah, I know, man. It's just, it wasn't like my spot. Do you know what I mean? Like, I didn't know a lot of people. Like, the only time I'd been to Rayleigh to play was at the Mill.
At the Mill, yeah, across the road.
Yeah, massive venue, wasn't it? And like, yeah, I remember losing badly, like a battle of the bands. By, you know, like some other like artists with their whole family and extended family turned up and voted for them, and we absolutely got pummeled. Yeah.
Oh, amazing. Battle of the bands. I mean, it's basically battle of the fans, isn't it? It's a promoter's, it's a promoter's dream. It's just like, right, let's just get all these bands in. We'll pull their pants down. We'll make them all get their mums and dads and aunts and uncles and dogs to come along and vote. And and then when we finally get to the winner.
Crippling self-doubt for the rest of their life.
Oh, amazing. So I guess if we want to talk clubbing, like, have you got any experiences of like those early sort of years of clubbing? Did you ever go into the high street kind of like commercial dancey?
Yeah, I did actually. I'm actually going to pick out one of my like go the other way here because I love dance music as well, and one of my favourites, especially from that time in my life and real sort of coming of age like memories. And nostalgia would be Enchant, Set You Free.
Yeah.
Like, it's such an important song for me because I remember, like, making the connection of, like, how similar, like, heavy metal rock music is to dance music because of, like, the speed and basically the harmony. And, yeah, just melodically, you know, it's they're not that different at all. And the energy is just incredible. And I remember being... like out on the green in front of the house playing like Wembley doubles with my pals, and someone had run like an extension lead from their letterbox with a stereo and like Enchant, Set You Free blasting through this like little Mickey Mouse looking stereo on the lawn. And it's just such a good vibe. And yeah, I remember then like a trip to Ibiza with some pals like later in life and just really soaking up the energy and the atmosphere. I loved it. But I'd say, clubbing in that regard, it'd be Enchant, Set You Free.
Is that the one that's got the really slow intro?
Yeah, like when I hold
yeah.
you, like that one, the thunderstorm effects yeah. and stuff.
It's a huge intro, that, isn't it? And then it just yeah. turns on its ass. It's the, when the song drops, yeah.
Proper, like, Naughty Rave-like vibes in there. But I actually, I did a cover of it, and I posted it on Facebook, I think, like, quite a few years ago. And Kevin O'Toole, who is Entrance, he got in touch. That was so amazing. And then, like, he was like, man, you should do, like, a full version and put it out. So I did, and... yeah, that kind of was the first thing that I put out as like a kind of solo artist, and which was amazing. Like,
and so up to that point, you from what I've aware of, you was in kind of like metal bands.
Yeah, yeah, metal, but like kind of school bands. Do you know what I mean? Like very quite anonymous bands, and like doing the rounds and losing Battle of the Bands all over the country. it's just earning your stripes, do you know what I mean? And like figuring out what you want to do, but you know, more what you don't want to do. And but yeah, very like formative and important, even just like bands like Megadeth inspiring me to be able to play guitar and sing at the same time, and like learn complex riffs while singing and all that stuff. It helps me now, like being able to play guitar on stage and sing and stuff like that. I'm definitely not playing Megadeth tunes, but like it all came from that. I've seen Dave Mustaine like shredding on a like flying V while singing his head off. It's so cool.
I've just got so many questions because like your career path's really quite unique. And what I normally do when on the first question is ask people how they approach songwriting and the power of the intro from the days of maybe being in sort of school bands and you know, trying to work out how to write a song and structure a song, and then, you know, passing around CDs of your demos and stuff like that. And then I generally ask all artists then about how the shift in technology has affected that, with the fact that thumbs move very quickly nowadays and attention spans are quite short. I said a bit of a generalization there, but I'm just basing it on watching my kids' thumbs when they're you know, flicking through their
yeah.
social media.
No, I think you're.
And so with that, like you know, I've spoken to people that have wrote very, very, you know, big commercial pop records, and have they still kind of a work into almost a science now of like got to be chorus here, chorus, you know, vocals got to be in by X amount of seconds, mm-hmm. and things like that, and. And your exposure has grown hugely through social media. And so how has that affected what you do?
It's changed my day to day, because now I'm like most of my days I'm in London writing and in a studio, and it's the absolute dream. Do you know what I mean? I thank my lucky stars every day, even if I'm, you know, driving up there stuck in horrendous traffic, that I get to do what I've wanted to do since I was, you know, 14 years old, finding the Iron Maiden CD on the bus. It's like, it's amazing. I'm incredibly grateful. And it's such, I used to write songs just on my own, you know, in my studio, or, you know, sitting on my bed with a guitar. And they seem to come a lot easier when you're younger, but that doesn't mean that they're good. They're usually, you know, quite awful, those songs that you write, but they're again, super important. And, not to say that there's young kids out there that aren't writing absolutely gorgeous pieces of music when they're young. It's just that I didn't. Yeah. And but so like now I'm co-writing a lot of the time because I just absolutely love it. I still write by myself and like form like ideas and get stuff down. But I find the most joy when I'm in a room with someone else or two people, like, so there's three of us in total most of the time. And they're actually dear friends of mine now, called Amy, Wodge and Max Wolfgang. We write a lot together, and it's just us three in a room. So like one of us will like have a theme in our minds. Like, I want to write something that kind of captures this feeling or uses this kind of like idea metaphorically. Let's do it. And 20 minutes, we've got a song, you know? And that kind of that spark is incredibly rare to capture when you're on your own. But I'm only speaking, of course, from my experience. I'm sure there's absolute geniuses out there that, that are able to bottle that lightning quickly. But for me personally, like, that's where the magic happens, when I'm in the room with like people like Amy and Max. And it's the most important thing for me about songwriting is just not having the idea. It comes into the room because you're just really, and not to get too airy fairy about it, but it's in my opinion, it's completely true that you're just a vessel. You're channeling that song between you. Like, no one in my experience writes the song if it's a great song. It just comes through, it spills out. You're playing over some chords, and all of a sudden someone in the room will just, it'll just come out of nowhere. It's not,
totally.
It's incredible to witness when it works like that. And the difference between good songs and bad songs is not getting in the way of the song. So like, if there's an idea coming, don't stop and think, yeah, but it's not very, it's not this enough, or it's not that enough. It's I want it to be more like this artist. As soon as you start doing that, you're literally building this wall in front of this energy that's coming into the room. So just let the song be, let it make itself. And then when it's done and it's written, then have your opinions and talk about it. Do you know what I mean? But let the song just come through and exist. That was the one that's meant to be done at that time.
Well,
so trying to write your like rock opera, like it's, let it happen the day that the rock opera is scheduled. Do you know what I mean? when that's the day that it's meant to happen, it will happen. But trying to write it, you're probably not going to write a very good one.
Brilliant. Well answered there as well. For track six, we've mentioned home, so I'm going to take you home, and I'm going to ask for a favourite song from an artist from your home county, please.
Home county. I'm trying to think of artists. Hang on. Well, I mean, bands that spring to mind are In Me. Obviously, I'm guessing you know a lot about.
I'm good pals with Dave. Yep.
Yeah, amazing songwriter. This is a hard one for me, actually, because although like I know Dave is a wicked songwriter, I was never like switched on to Immy at the time. It was like I was more in the old school metal phase than like the new metal thing that was going on. Which is very embarrassing, because going back, I kind of wish that I'd spent more time.
I'm just trying to think of other like rock bands that were there was a great band from our neck of the woods as well. I don't know if you remember the band Forever Never.
Yeah, I remember Forever Never. Was it Rennie?
Rennie, yeah.
Singing. Yeah.
He had a spectacular voice.
Yeah, man. Yeah, he's wicked. I'm trying to. Because Tuck, wasn't it? Susie Quattro's son, Tuck.
Yeah.
He was playing guitar for a while, I think. Or was that? No, that was that from almost the end. I'm getting confused, because there was like, it wasn't really my world. So apologies again, people listening, and they're like saying, "What are you talking about, Sam?" Like, if they're really into that scene, because I'm butchering it. But some really good friends of mine were in a band called Fake Komodo.
Oh, they were amazing.
Yeah, and I think so. Yeah, I'm going to go with them, and I'm going to say a song called. Oh, hang on. It was on their latest record. I'm just going to look at it because I want to get this right. So 2 seconds.
I used to put them on. I used to do these like all ages, all dayers, a place called the Civic Hall. And I used to put on Fake Komodo, and there was another band around that time called Page, and there was like, oh, what was that, Cinders Fall, and there was all of these kind
of... Yeah, I remember.
but Fake Komodo, they were like head and shoulders above all the others. Like, they were like...
Oh, mate, 100%. The song I'm thinking of is A Man Left Behind, and... I remember when I'd heard the demo because I was around drummer's house. We used to hang out a bunch. We still do. But he showed me this demo they'd come up with. And it was, the song that ended up being called A Man Left Behind. And I was floored. It was so good, so catchy, and just like a strong song, and like, but also a strong pop song.
Yeah.
In terms of structure and like melodically, the idea of it, how snappy it was. And I was really jealous, actually. I remember sort of telling him, like, I'm gutted because this is really bloody good. But they were so good. They really, them and Enter Shikari for me, and I've become pals with some of the guys in Enter Shikari.
I had Rao on last week.
Did you? What a legend. What a lovely guy.
Brilliant.
But they, I'd say, yeah, between Faye and Enter Shikari, just those bands were really inspiring to see people like, I mean, Shikari really did it, you know, like I think the last tour they did was like a stadium tour. Faye stopped before they got to that point, but I think the members, they didn't really want to be doing that anymore. But what they must have helped so many kids of that era just have some belief in themselves. Yeah. Like so many of fans, like the young kids then are probably old now, like older now, and they're in bands of their own, or they're producers, they're writers, and they would have been inspired by bands like Faye Komodo. Was so professional, so tight. Like it wasn't, although they were a local band from Essex, when you went to see them, they didn't have like, you know, like the kind of the scratchiness of a local band where songs aren't that really tight, feedback, strings breaking, or like all these things that are, you know, that's totally normal and quite cool in a way. But Faye Komodo are just, they were so professional.
Yeah.
And like having the lights and everything with them. And for me, it was really inspiring and like completely frustrating that you couldn't get better than them in your own bands. You know, you're like, damn, why can't we be that good?
But what I also like about what you said there, you said that, you know, they had really good songs. They also had really good pop songs, like them pop sensibilities. Now, I cast my mind back to some of the song choices you've chosen, whether that be that Freddie Mercury song, or whether that be Fat Lip, or whether that be Iron Maiden. All of them bands are completely sort of different genres of music completely, but all of them have the fundamentals of pop. You know, I know everyone thinks Iron Maiden's this really raucous rock band, metal band, whatever, but the songs are pop songs. It's really totally solid verses, choruses, mid-lates, and it's the same with some. And definitely, I mean, that Freddie Mercury track is as pop as it gets. Like, it's pure pop. And like, and I think, you know, and you, so many of them bands that you mentioned there from that local scene there, like, it was abrasive, you know, punk ethos, but like, pop sensibility.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And when you get all of that together, it's perfect.
Yeah, man, totally. Like, pop isn't, for me, my experience now working predominantly in, like, a pop sphere is the difference is minute. Like, I've been in studios with bands over the years and, like, the editing that goes on behind it and the stigma from sometimes the metal community thinking that pop is fake and polished and unrealistic. But because I've come from, I've been in the room in both worlds, it's totally untrue. The amount of editing that goes on in the metal world, in some cases, it's more. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? But that's not a bad thing. It's a stylistic choice, like having those drums absolutely on the grid, triggered, like, so the velocities are, again, like, very unrealistic for, like, when you're comparing it to the ability of a human being behind a drum kit. And I am very much painting with broad brushstrokes here, so I'm just trying to make the point, but there's also the stigma from the pop world that metal is this kind of like bolshy, childlike enigma. And that's completely false too, because, you know, like there's so much passion from the fan base in metal that you don't get sometimes in pop music.
It's really weird because one of the topics that consistently comes up on this podcast, and it did earlier as well, is tribalism in music. You cast your mind back to talking about band t-shirts and doing your hair like the guy from the band, you know, as Derek, and then you don't see that so much in young people now in regards to the statement in what they're wearing. I'm sure there's statement there. What I know, I don't know. I'm 48, but I'm basing it on like the people, you know, the young people that I see my kids with and things like that. That tribalism doesn't seem to be as stark, and people seem to be, which is a good thing, more open-minded. And I think maybe due to the accessibility of music now, it's like, well, I do like that. And yeah, I like that as well. And if I wear this, then it kind of, you know, ticks all the boxes. However, metalers are metalers, and that's still tribal as fuck. You know, you can walk down the street and go, no idea what you're into. I wouldn't be able to call what music you're into. You're into metal. Like, it's so, it's so tribal.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, but what I love about that, and having a lot of friends that are like metalheads, and I consider myself in a way to be a bit of a metalhead still. Do you know what I mean? But like, I love that you can just sit down and have a conversation about music. Do you know what I mean? It's fantastic, because for the most part, youth will disintegrate that kind of blinkered view on music. It is a rite of passage we all have to go through. We all have to kind of like be all or nothing to something when we're young, but that fizzles out because if you don't, you become just a bit of a pain to be around. So to not be able to be open to like listen to things. Like now I'm seeing like on like TikTok or whatever, like Billy Joel songs are coming, like kids are listening to Billy Joel, and I'm like, I'm stoked, man. Billy Joel's like one of my absolute favorites of all time. And like these young kids are like singing along to, you know, like some of his like best tracks. Do you know what I mean? Like it's amazing.
Well, Sam, for the last track, you get to play DJ and Tastemaker now. And I'm going to ask you for track 7 to tell me a song, or to tell the listeners a song that they may not know that you'd like them to go and listen to.
I like this song. I heard it the other day. It just popped up on my Discover Weekly. It's called Holding Hands by The Magic Lantern. And I just think it's a beautiful song. Like, I could easily overthink this question, do you know what I mean? And try and think of like the coolest song that I think no one's heard. But I made a note of it because it's the latest song that I feel like is under the radar that I heard. I think it's just beautiful. It's kind of got that like Bon Iver-y kind of thing. It's just a ton of, from what it sounds like to me, like a brass section and a vocal. And then like the intro is just gorgeous. We were talking about kind of intros earlier, and the video for it, I checked it out this morning as well. It's really interesting. It's like this guy in a wetsuit who's like under a shower, and then he has to make it to the sea. It's kind of like this guy's a fish or something. The way that I got it, like trying to survive, like trapping all this water in his wetsuit and staying wet enough to survive to get to the sea. I think, I mean, if this gets back to the dude that wrote it and he's like, that's not what it's about, I'm sorry. That's the vibe I got. And I thought it was really like, really interesting and quite cool for sort of seemingly like an under the radar kind of artist who hopefully has like a moment.
Wonderful. Wonderful.
Yeah.
So we're recording this on the 1st of June. The sun is shining for the first time properly. It has been for a couple of days now, but the sun is back. The pubs are open. Hopefully, you know, there's going to be some venues open soon, and you know, and well, I guess there's some open already, socially distanced. Hopefully there's going to be some music festivals going ahead. So with that in mind, and you know, and you know, the sunshine bringing on that kind of positive mindset, Sam, what are you looking forward to most from the remainder of 2021, and what have you got coming up professionally?
I feel like there's a lot of joy in coming. I'm looking forward to working on my surfing, because right now I'm the worst in the water when I go out. Like, I haven't surfed in like a year. So all these, well, like, just about to go in Fistral now. And there is something quite comforting about it, actually, because there's no pressure on me from myself, most importantly, because I know I'm going to suck. And that it's going to be a long, hard sort of climb to get strength back and stuff. But also, no one cares about you when you're rubbish, when you're out in the lineup, because they're not expecting anything. Yeah. So it's quite freeing. You can just be really bad anonymously, which takes me back to those Battle of the Band days as well. But yeah, I'm looking forward to doing that. Like, just spending time with my family in the sunshine, in the garden, man. I'm just really excited about that. And professionally, I'm not sure if I can say, actually, because I've got this thing, just keep your eyes peeled for late July, early August for some live stuff. But I can't really say anything more than that. But it's going to be super small. So if you're really into wanting to see something in London, and I've definitely said too much, but yeah, just keep an eye out.
Okay. Then. Okay. And so for people that want to keep up to speed on that and want to find out more about what you do, where's the best place to keep up to speed with you, Sam?
I'd say Instagram. Yeah, just, yeah, head over to there. Lots of stupid videos, me singing my head off, and yeah, general nonsense.
I will, if it's cool with you, I'll tag you in it when we put this episode out, and so it'll make it easy for
people to
go and explore what you do. Sam, it's been absolute joy talking records with you today.
Likewise, it's been so good. Like, it's just both of us are absolute. I can see the amount of stoke on both of our faces because I'm sunburnt. I don't know about you. You look good and tanned.
Got a little bit of really colour yesterday. Good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, lovely.
Got burnt.
Well, have a lovely surf, brother, and thanks again, yeah. Sam. Oh man, how lovely is Sam? What a top dude. As I walked out of the studio after recording that into my garden, I just thought, do you know what? I wish I was walking down to the beach to go and have a surf. Like, what a life. Living in Cornwall, days like this when the sun is shining. Surfing, swimming in the sea. Oh, heaven. Absolute heaven. What an absolute gent. Really brilliant how it unfolds that he's a fellow Essex boy. Yeah, just loved the fact that it kind of shifted a little bit, that, you know, it wasn't exactly the format that I've always done, but I think Sam was such an easy person to talk to and so enthusiastic and impassioned about his music that it didn't matter. We just got overly excited about records, and that is everything that this podcast is about. So thanks once more to Sam. Thanks to you lot for continuing to listen to this podcast and support it and share it and help grow it. I love you a lot, and I really appreciate yous getting behind it, because as I've mentioned before, during these weird months that we've been experiencing, this podcast has absolutely kept my head where it needs to be, and has kept me topped up with interesting and engaging conversations, thank you very much. You can find out about everything you need to know about the podcast at offthebeatandtrackpodcast.com. remember, that's beat and, not beaten. And I know my lazy Essex twang always goes off the beaten track. It's beat and. I think I'm done. Just been rabbiting away. Just to give you a little insight, these intros and outros I recorded just sitting in the little room on my own, just having a natter. Normally it takes me about 6 or 7 goes at it, but I've just pressed record straight after the episode for this one, and I'm still buzzing. First take. Nailed it. I'll be back next time. Take care. Be excellent to each other. Love you lots. Bye-bye. this Off the Beaten Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. Keep me, Stew, with him.